Blog Talk Radio.
Howling Wolf's 44. This is your mother's medicine cabinet. I'm Frank Reardon, brought to you by the people of the literary underground, all 600 of them. Tonight's guest is Iris Appelquist out of Kansas City. We're just going to bring her on, and as I'm bringing her on, I just would like to say fuck NBA refereeing.
That's really an inappropriate statement to make for this sort of premise.
What?
That's kind of an inappropriate statement to make for this sort of premise.
Because
I have no way to respond to that.
You don't have to respond to that.
Okay.
I was just saying, that's why I said it before I brought you on.
How are you doing?
So how's it going? I'm all right.
Oh, it's awesome.
How are you doing?
Well, you know, about an hour ago, I laid my daughter down for the night, and I got all dressed up and put on full makeup for this interview, and right now I'm sitting in a very lavishly decorated reading room that's adjacent to my home. It's not part of my home. I keep it separate, but that's not true. I'm in my pajamas. I'm sitting in my kitchen.
I was going to say, like, you really all by yourself, putting on makeup, and yeah, I
did. Did you ever watch WKRP in Cincinnati?
I was a kid, yeah.
Yeah. There was this one episode where Les Nessman is about to go on air, and he's combing his hair, and he wanted to comb his hair. He couldn't find his comb, and he had to borrow somebody else's. And he says, "What do you need this for?" And Les Nessman says, "Well, I'm about to go on." And the guy says, "Well, you're on the radio." And I always remember that for some weird reason.
That's all right. Iris,
okay.
putting on her best Les Nesbitt impersonation right here, live.
Here we are.
What do you got in store? What's up with the new book? Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Well, I tell different people different things about it. For right now, I will say that it's about 90 poems, maybe a few fewer than that, that focus largely on poverty and divorce and a kind of backward feminism, being bewildered at the pace of the world, and bewildered and also defiant, I guess. That's the best way I could describe it. My work on it was complete a couple of years ago, and it's just been a kind of a waiting game and a fundraising game since then to get it out. But the guys at Prospero's Books, who also run Spartan Press, have done a fabulous job helping me edit and correct many, 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 many mistakes that I've made while writing it. So that's what I have to say about that. I'm excited
so
to have it come out finally.
Ever since I've known you, you've had a bizarre kind of bewilderment about you. go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, give us a poem.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, just kind of like, we go back and forth kind of like this.
Okay, I can do that. I got poems here in front of me.
All right.
This is a newer one called Aha. I have this thing. It has no shape or form. It has no color or weight, but it is a thing that I have. I'm not sure what I should do with it or what is going to happen because I have it. I held it in the cup of my palm and breathed on it hard. Nothing happened. I laid it on the kitchen table and watched it for a long time. I let cold water run over it in the sink. I showed it some flowers, orange-yellow tulips in a vase. I took it outside and left it all night in the grass. It made an impression on the leaves, but that was all. It remains a thing. No one knows or needs to know about this thing, that it lives with me, alongside me. I almost cut it with a knife, trying to make an impression on it, the plastic handle becoming slippery in my grip, instead of letting it be a thing. I sat down on the floor, relieved by the stains on the carpet.
Hmm. Yeah, that's I think, like, ever since I probably met you at that first Kansas City reading, I think, about three or four years ago, you've always had, like, a way of, like, I don't know, stunning, but yet being a complete wise-ass sometimes, too. I'm not saying that poem in particular, but I don't know. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you've always taken, like, it a bit more serious, I think, which is a good thing than other people. Very like nitpicking, in a way, I would say.
Do you mean generally or at my approach?
Yeah,
to...
generally, like in writing.
Okay.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I take it pretty seriously sometimes, to a fault. I've always been a writer, like, since I was a little kid. Ever since I learned how to write, I wrote things. I started writing poetry when I was a teenager and, you know, wrote out of the generalized angst that most teenagers write out of. But as I discovered more and more about literature and about art and about my own mentality, which happens to be the creative mentality, I decided without really an event to have it be decided. I just came to be that this was what I would spend my whole life toiling over. And where it comes to a fault on my part is that not everyone takes it so seriously, and that is offensive to me for some reason. because, and, you know, and that's just my own silly foible, I guess. When I was drinking pretty heavily, I wore my heart much more on my sleeve about it. I was very rude to several people on several different occasions because I did not approve. Well, not that I didn't approve of their writing, but that they didn't seem to realize that I was a much better writer than them. And I had to make sure that they knew it. But whether or not they ever came to that same realization as I did is beside the point. But I take it somewhat less seriously now because I'm older and I've learned more just as it goes, you know, so it goes. But yes, no, I do take it very seriously. It's one of the oldest art forms. It is one of the highest art forms. And I mean, we spend our whole lives each and every day, like, you know, communicating with each other with this language that we have that we were born into. And we seldom are very reverent of its power. And I think that's what poetry is that. It's reverence, and it's powerful, both separately and at the same time.
Yeah, I would have to say that, like, for example, like, how I'll just use myself as an example. When you used to, like really bear down on me sometimes for, like, line breaks or grammatical things, like, I don't think I've ever known many people. Well, I've known people, but, like, that I was close friends with or friends with that, you know, took that as more serious, because there's, like, that whole, like, genre of thinking where, you know, that doesn't matter, but it kind of really does.
No, yeah, I mean, that's why I sometimes take issue with the underground community, because they're so bent on only using free verse, and they're so bent on using very vernacular language. But yeah, no, because we do what we do as poets, we have many tools at our disposal, and to have a full toolbox and to only use the flathead or the Phillips or whatever metaphor you would rather is sort of kind of frustrating. And I'm not, you know, I'm definitely a free verse writer. I'm not trying to, like, I don't know, make anybody mad about that, but I'm a free verse writer because I'm lazy, and I have this need for gratification that happens when I complete a poem. So that's just, personally, that's why I do that. And the grammar, the spelling, the line breaks are important, almost, you know, nigh on integral to the integrity of the finished work, I think.
Okay. So why don't you give us another piece?
I'm going to read a poem by this woman, Rhiannon Dickerson, because it's lovely.
Okay.
It's called Accident Prone. You will tell your only brother that you've never had a friend, never once, not really. He will stare at you. He will look at his hands. He will say, "You shouldn't say that." You will feel ashamed and never say it again. When I say you, I mean I. When I say I mean I. When I say cactus, I mean thorn flower. It is just that way in poems. The friend I mentioned earlier liked ponies. She would sit on them backwards. She galloped that way. It is common for many of my friends to enjoy equestrian activities. Who can blame them? Horses are neat. My brother says I'm prone to excessive exaggeration. He's probably right. I lie to people, or you do, rather. You put on a good show like you're an accident, like you are the person with the arm that just fell off one day, the person with the messiest mess. You forgot you could breathe back there, didn't you? You can breathe. Tell your brother to look away. He might not want to see this. You put your arm back on.
So, was that Rhiannon Dickerson?
Rhiannon Dickerson.
Okay.
She's, we were in a workshop together with three other people. As with, you know, pickup workshops go, they just sort of comes together and then peters out and comes together and peters out. And we have to be sort of fine with that. She recently had a brand new baby, and I haven't really been in very close contact with her over the past 6 months or so, but I have some poems of hers saved on my computer from having edited them or put my marks on them or whatever. This one, however, is on Facebook. Anyone could find it for themselves if they wanted to look at it.
Cool. So
yeah.
Here's a question that is probably a pain in the ass to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Okay.
Like, from what I knew you, from when I have my brief time living in Kansas City, we're just like, you know, a couple of vagabonds bothering Reberg and drinking whiskey out of a bag. In the past few years, of course, you've had a child. I mean, how has that affected? Has it changed your writing at all, having a child?
Oh, shit. Well, when I got pregnant, I said to myself that I'm not going to write poems about being pregnant, and I'm not going to write poems about being a mom. I went ahead and did both of those things anyways, but it put becoming pregnant, starting a family, having that family sort of dissolve, also quitting the lifestyle that I was living, the very, like you said, vagabond, drinking whiskey out of a bag, you know, walking the streets at all hours and, you know, just being being a hedonist, you know, all that had to stop pretty immediately when I became pregnant. And honestly, I was ready for it to stop, but I lacked the discipline or the willpower or whatever to make it stop for no other reason than just making it stop. My writing has been affected. Well, as a result, not necessarily of just becoming a mom, but as a result of not being wasted every single day, my writing is much more cogent. It's both easier and more difficult, because I had that sort of that drunken automatism that I could just sit down and longhand or at the computer, I could write anything at any time, whenever I felt like it. And now it's different because there has to be an allotted space during the day for that to happen, and so it's just a different mode, I guess. But it's no less satisfying or gratifying, no less difficult or easy, I guess. I don't know.
So basically, what you're saying is sometimes when the inspiration hits you, you just gotta wait.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for those who have children, I'm sure they would understand. But yeah. I guess that's what jotting things down is for. So how did this project for your new book come about with the people at Prospero's?
It was 2009 when Blunt Trauma came out, and that's the book that I co-authored with Jason Reberg. He was on your fine program a couple of weeks ago. That came out in 2009, and a few months after that, well, maybe it was longer, I don't know. After Blunt Trauma came out, it was pretty well received. They asked me for a full-length work of my own, and there was a lot of stuff that I had been hanging on to and hadn't made it into whatever magazines I'd submitted to, and that needed a place to go, or else it was just going to sit in my computer. So I put that all together, and actually I had entered it into a competition, and I knew one of the judges, and he told me, this is after they asked for the work from me, but okay, so I entered it into a competition, they asked for work from me, and then I talked to one of the judges that I knew, and he said, yeah, you're in the top three, and I said, oh, well, fuck, and I withdrew it from the competition, and I gave it to Will Latham, and I've added to and subtracted from it over the past couple of years, and I think now it's a really solid really solid work. I'm pretty proud of it.
I still have that original one that you gave me that I think you photocopied and wrote off your typewriter with the orange binding.
Oh, that one? Yeah.
I think that's the only book I have of yours outside.
You don't
of
have Blunt Trauma?
No. Reberg was supposed to give me a copy, but he totally Rebergged out. You know, he was too. He's like, hey, man, I'll trade you a book for, because, like, he told me once he didn't know if he had any copies or something, and he's like, I'll trade you a book, and I'm like, all right, and I'm like, 2 months later, I'm like, hey, you still want to do that? Now, I guess he was just lost in Stephen Colbert videos for 2 months or something, I don't know.
Yeah, or Motorhead YouTubes, or porn, you know. Whatever he does.
He's probably cursing you with a bent fist and Prosperos with all the lights out right now. Damn,
he does that
Apple
at random
quit.
Intervals throughout the day anyways.
So here's a question that you can answer that I ask everybody. You can answer it
okay.
as long as you want or in a couple of words if you want. The internet, has it done anything for writing people's at all, or is it more negative?
Oh. I don't know. Any answer I give would be kind of barbed, I guess. It's like, what I like about it is that we have so much more access to a sense of community. Not that the community is real, but that we have a sense of community. That's a good thing, I think. It helps us feel like, you know, that there are more people. I don't know. It helps to not feel like a weirdo or like you're wasting your time, because there's a lot of, you can look at and see a lot of other people doing exactly what you're doing. And the fact that I really enjoy that a lot of independent small presses have materialized from the internet phenomenon over the past decade or 15 years or whatever, however long we've been at this. However, as soon as one starts, three go away, you know, it's like, it's so ephemeral and like, it almost has a fly-by-night sort of feeling sometimes. There are a few that have had staying power and that I'm really glad for, but, I don't know, it's, on the whole, it can only be positive because it's people taking time out of their day to be creative.
Yeah.
The negative aspects are just when we happen to read really shitty poetry to ourselves on the internet late at night. Do you think that could
be with the up-and-coming generation? I don't know if you'd be somewhere in the middle with your age, maybe, but majority of that generation, they have an instant gratification kind of thing rather than, per se, putting a little bit of elbow grease and getting good or something. You think that would be a negative, too?
Yeah. No, it's totally. I mean, these younger people coming up, these, I mean, I'm 29. I'm not as old as you are, Frank, but.
Fuck off.
Now, these younger people, though, the kids, the people in their early 20s and late teens that are just discovering that they have a knack for words or they have a knack for turning phrases or putting a poem together, I think that their go of it will be much more difficult than mine or yours just because of the pace of the media that we're exposed to. I think that they will have much less self-control over what they put out there. But it's all going to hell in a handbasket anyways.
Still got that classic nihilism?
It's not that I believe in nothing. It's just that I believe that we're doomed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's our wilderment with your one eyebrow tilted up.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us another poem?
I can do that.
All right.
Okay, let's see. This is from the book. The book is called Briar. It's called Help. Here are the tools for my vivisection, and may you wield them with impunity and grace. Some cherry blossoms, a hand-rolled cigarillo, tornado weather, a 21-ounce pool cue, supermoon, an ancient bluesman singing through tinny speakers on a balmy night, disjunctive love poems, bloody red meat on a dinner plate, a fistful of cardinal feathers, a good, stiff drink. With any of these, my organs and vessels may well leap into your hands, bring protection and a strong sense of order. My parts are extrinsic to who you know as me. You have made a mess which requires special agents besides polite language and politic gestures. You're a noun, in trouble with verbs and my guts.
Wow. That was an excellent poem.
It's kind of sexy.
Yeah, it was very good. I like the whole blues guy thing. That was really good. So when is your book coming out? Is there any call for that yet, or is it still going through printing
and
all that?
For anyone who may have that question, I invite them to call Prospero's Books and ask them. You would want to address that query to Mr. Will Latham. You can find him on Facebook. Because I have no idea. I have no earthly clue. They don't really give me a lot of information. I try not to be too much up their asses about it, just because how annoying would that be? But
Yeah. That was a really good poem. So what is I'm sure it changes for you all the time, like it does everybody, like does me or anybody. But who has stayed strong with you as influences? Like, who might have influenced you? I mean, they could be alive or dead. It doesn't matter.
Well, Edna St. Vincent Millay, I've always liked. A. Cummings, Dorothy Parker. There's this writer from, I can't remember where he's from, Portugal, perhaps. Yeah, Fernando Pessoa, and an odd smattering of other things. You know, of course, Charles Bukowski, of course, Tom Waits, of course, Bob Dylan, of course, Arnie DeFranco when I was young and shaving my head and, you know, wearing cargo shorts and wife beaters, you know. And then now it's, I mean, those are, those influences will always, you know, run pretty strong in my heart and in my work as I interpret it. And then now I like, there's this woman called Brenda Shaughnessy that I'm really fascinated with. There's this localish guy called Mark Hennessy that I really like. There's Jason Reberg, who the more I read his work, the more I like it. When I first came upon his work, I could have, you know, I appreciated it. I didn't really, I wasn't in love with it, but the more familiar I become with his craft and his himself as a person, of course, influences my opinion of his work, but pretty dear to me. And then, you know, Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot, blah, 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 whatever.
So on and so on.
Yeah.
So now I guess Reberg's not holding his fist up in a dark Prosperos right now.
No, he's holding it in his pants.
He probably is looking at his own book, too, while doing that.
Yeah. Poor guy. God, I love him. Oh, jeez.
So, why don't you give us another poem so I can set something up here?
Okay. I got, speaking of Charles Bukowski, I'll read one of his poems. I got this one picked out. It's
okay.
From one of the newer posthumous collections. It's from when he was an old and dying man. It's one of my favorite poems. It's called Purple Glow. It's kind of long. My work is big on brevity, and his is not. So here we go. I see the high-heeled shoes and a dried white rose lying on the bar like a clenched fist. Whiskey makes the heart beat faster, but it sure doesn't help the typing. Or no, but it sure doesn't help the mind. And isn't it funny how you can ache just from the deadly drone of existence? I see this nudie dancer running along the top of the bar, shaking what she thinks is magic with all those faces staring up from overpriced drinks. And me, being here, no shit. I really didn't care about her, but I love the pulse of the loud, flat music, something in the purple glow, something about it all. I've hardly ever felt better. I watch her, the purple doll, so sad, so cheap, so sad. You would never want to bed down with her or even hear her speak. Yet, in that drunken place, you would like to hand your heart to her and say, touch it, but then give it back. She dances so fiercely now in that purple glow. Purple does something strange to me. There was a night 30 years ago. I was drunk, true, and there was a purple Christ in a glass box outside a little church. And I smashed the glass. I broke the glass, and then I reached in and touched Christ, but he was only a dummy. And I heard the sirens then and started running. Well, my mind has never been the same since, and the typing helps, but you can't type all the time, so the nudie dancer now breaks what heart I have left. And I don't know why, but I start giving money to everybody in the bar. I give a 5 to this guy, a 10 to that. I think maybe it might wake them to the wisdom of it all, but they don't even say thanks. They just think I'm a fool. The manager comes up and tells me I'm 86th. I hand him a 20. He takes it. Two friends have been sitting at a back table. They help me up and out of the bar. I think the situation is very funny, but they're angry. Where's your car? Where's your fucking car? I say, I don't know. Too fucking bad, they say. And leave me sitting alone on an apartment house step. I light up and smoke a cigarette, then get up and begin the long walk, a walk I know will entail at least a couple of hours to find my car from past experience. But I know that when I find it, the rush of happiness will be all I need, and that I will then be able to begin my life all over again.
Well, I remember, I don't think I, what book was that one in?
It's called The People Look Like Flowers at Last.
Yeah, I haven't got that one yet. I got all so many. The guy has seems to have like 4 billion poetry collections.
Yeah, it's kind of disgusting. I've got 6 or 7, plus the novels and some short stories, and yeah, whatever. But this, when I got this, it came out, I think, in 09 or 08. But I got it shortly after it came out, and I was just super pleased because I am pretty familiar with the tone of his work, and there's a lot of things in this particular volume that are, like, surprising in the vein of his work. So
the stuff that he has when he put out later, not to get a huge discussion about him, but, like, it seems like more wisdom, you know, than the earlier stuff when it was just more, not that there wasn't wisdom in it, but it was a little bit more wild, I think. It's like an old man's
right.
wisdom in it now, yeah.
Yeah, he
and
stopped,
that's a shame
stopped fighting I don't know, the facade that he had built up over the years, I think, a little bit in this book, which I appreciate.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, I think, writers, and even some that are, that we might know or that are on the internet that kind of have to live this character they built, like, you know, Hunter Thompson had to, too, you know.
I think Thompson, though, differently, I think Thompson really had more a motive to maintain that facade, and, like, I think he really enjoyed it, and I think it that's made him feel safe, whereas with Bukowski, I got the feeling that he needed it, like, he used it as sort of a, I don't want to say crutch, but he used it as a mechanism to create his artwork, but Thompson was a different beast altogether.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So you got this new book coming out, and we have to, all of us go onto the internet on Facebook and plague Will over down at Prospero's book. Or
even better than harassing them, you could donate, like, $5, $2, whatever. Every time I ask them how much more we need to get to the goal, it's always a couple $100s, they say. And so one day I hold off and wrote him a check for a couple $100s, and still there's, I don't know what's going on. But yeah, no, besides harassing them, yeah. Huh? What?
A couple of $5, $2 bills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever you can, whatever you want to donate.
Or
of course,
we could just all call and disturb Reberg's political and YouTube watching with constant phone calls.
Uh-huh. I think you would really enjoy that. Yeah.
You know, I could, like, change my voice to an old man's voice or, you know, or something like that each time that I call.
He would know.
So why don't you give us one of yours from the book? We got about 6.5 minutes left.
Oh, fine. Well, I have to pull it up here. I'm just going to pick a random one, and I'm going to regret it.
Fun.
Okay. All right, and stop. Aha. No, everybody's heard that poem. Okay, here's some haiku.
Okay.
It's a series of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 haiku. The lady across the bar is wearing next to nothing. I'd fuck her. I don't take the news seriously, except for the high gas prices. Where is it? I don't see the thing you mean, or do I? Never mind then. I've had enough of this place. I need the nearest suburban strip mall. Where people fail, there is always technology. Never forget that.
So, I can't recall, I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I can't recall you ever reading a poem of yours that might have been 3-4 stanzas a page long. What's your thing about having so much brevity in what you do?
Well, when I was composing Longhand, that was just the length of a page. you know, and that's where I would begin and sum up on one page, and that was just a habit I got into. And there's a, okay, so we've all been to a poetry reading, and we're in the audience, and probably it's an open mic, and we're just sitting there waiting for our turn to read anyways. But we're there, and there's somebody reading, and this, and the poem that they're reading is way too long. It's just so overblown and just, like, too wordy, and it's just way, it's like 6 minutes too long. And everybody in the room knows it. Nobody's going to say it, and everybody feels the same way. I never want to be that reader, ever. So that's part of it. That's not all of it. That's part of it. Also, I just, I don't know, my economy with words comes from having a pretty big vocabulary, if I do say so myself, and being able to express myself succinctly in a poem. Not succinctly anywhere else in my life. Can I be brief, but in a poem I can be, which I like.
So would you, because I remember one time I asked you, I was like, damn it, Applequist, don't you like anything that's long? And you're like, yeah. But you say, yeah, but I guess that would be stuff that you would have in books that you like. I mean, you say earlier T.S. Eliot, all I can think about is like extremely long poems.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I guess you kind of have to be a master at that craft in many ways. Because, yeah, I agree. There's many times where I've gone to readings and there have been people with what seems like four-hour epics. It's probably mm-hmm. like 10 minutes, but I've been guilty for long poems too, but that's not to like knock other people.
Well, you know, I do write longer stuff. It's more when I do write a longer poem, just because of the way I am, it has to have whatever metaphor I'm trying to achieve or whatever message I'm trying to convey. It has to be pretty complete in my mind before I begin it. The last thing I did that was pretty long is I wrote a kind of a call and response to America by Allen Ginsberg, and that's a fuck-off long poem. But, I mean, for me to write, but...
Yeah.
That's the last long thing I did.
Well, we're down to the end of the show, Applequist.
Son of a bitch.
Is there something you want to read? We got about 2 minutes, or do you just want to like flip me off?
I got one.
Okay.
This is a pretty pleasing poem. It's called Hollering. I want to go gray early. I want all my lovers to eventually leave me, throwing up their hands and giving up the ghost of what early on I was: vivacious, caring, funny, warm. I want the terrorists to win, the brave new world to come crashing. I want to win the lottery or become homeless. I want sometimes to be a man. I want to continue to throw the curve. Having breached the closing cusp of youth, I predict midlife crisis at 42. The days only get shorter in length. Earlier at the end, time becomes irrelevant. Timing becomes everything. I want to wear a mask. I want the New Yorker to publish me. I want to have safe sex, never mention it to the boyfriend. I want to someday vote Republican. It takes more than knowing better, more than keeping an open mind, more than work. The requisite resources are vast and foreign. I want a drink or a sandwich named after me, the depth of my rumored prowess in one thing or another. I want sheepish to mean something else. I want amnesia.
Excellent. That was good. Yeah, it was great having you on.
Good to be here in my kitchen in my pajamas. Yeah, yeah.
No, don't lie, man. You were all in the mirror putting on lipstick, listening to Patty Duke records.
You know,
well,
all right.
Well, I guess I'll be seeing you or and talking to you or all that. She's counting us out.
Yes, please.
All right, have a good one. Next week's show is Dan Provost. All right.